I think what I'd like to do is talk for just a few minutes. How few we'll see as I feel my way along. And then we'll break and go into question and answer. I believe there are a few basics that we can cover that will kind of stimulate the rest of the discussion. I would like to suggest that Miles Seaborn has already put his finger on one of the most critical areas of a church staff member's problems, and that is that most church staff members I have talked to leaped before they looked when they were looking for a job. Shame on you if you do that once, but double shame on you if you ever do it again. And I think that the first area that we can just kind of sweep out and deal with quickly, that may be the most frustrating one of all, is the endless question that I get everywhere I go, but Ralph, the things that you talk about, I cannot do as a church staff member because my pastor, etc., 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 etc. Well, now I recognize that many times a church staff member is on his own spiritual pilgrimage, and at one point in that pilgrimage, he sees a staff job as being really a super thing, and he gets into it, and then God begins to broaden his own horizons. And he discovers he does not fit anymore where he started. He himself has grown. Perhaps he has grown beyond his pastor, at least he thinks he has. And so he's in trouble. But you know, for those of us who are here, I think there are just a few basic things that come from the world of management principles that we ought to recognize. The first one is this. If you are looking for a job, if you are seeking for a job, before you ever take that job, you ought to know certain things. And the first thing you ought to know is, what kind of a box are you going to live inside if you go to this position? And that means, what kind of a pastor are you going to work under? Is he a creative man, or is he threatened by creativity? Is he himself a driver, and does he have clearly defined goals, or does he have no goals at all, and very insecure, wanting you to come up with your own goals, following which, when you are effective and successful, he will be threatened by your effectiveness and your success, and try to figure out how he can dump you because of his own insecurity and paranoia. So the man that you're going to work under really is important. And a good way to be sure of your relationship with a pastor in advance is to check the man out. There are any number of ways that one can do that. One way is to talk to the man himself. Another way is to talk to friends of yours who know friends who know the man. What kind of a man was he in his last pastorate? If a pastor paints a rosy picture to you, that may or may not be the way the church really sees it. Sometimes a pastor fantasizes what he considers the church to be. And it's really a smart idea before you go very far to meet not only with a pastor and to carefully record his fantasies, but also talk with the youth committee or the chairman of the board of deacons or a representative group and find out what they say and what they think and what how they view your job. It might not be a dumb idea at all to talk to the last man who left and find out why he left. But if I were going to commit my wife and kids and my own life to a church situation, knowing that it would go for an indefinite period of time, I surely would be very, very thorough in doing my homework and in being sure that the situation is one in which I do fit, one in which I will not be frustrated, one in which I will be able to use the gifts that God has given me to the fullest extent. I am afraid many times our personal egos get trapped when a big church comes a-looking for us. And we see the fact that the auditorium is twice the size, or the membership is twice the size, or the town is twice the size, or the salary is larger. And we jump by these things. And that can be a very dangerous situation. Another thing is, if you get into a situation and you recognize that you and the pastor are not really playing in the same frame of reference, how long should you stay with it? Well, I think that's a deeply personal decision. But if I were a church staff member and I could not be what God wanted me to be in a situation, I'll flat guarantee I'd leave. I wouldn't sit around year after year being ground into hamburger by the frustration that goes on internally. And I'm not quite sure I'd recommend ever to anybody that they just check out with no place to go. That's usually an idiot's way of doing things, although God always has his own way of handling situations in every life, but it just looks to me like I'd start checking around and finding a new way. I just wouldn't sit endlessly in a situation where something could not be done. Now, in order for a church staff to function effectively, there must be a solid job description for every person on that staff. But a job description means too many things to too many people. And so I would like to just kind of review these points with you and indicate that it's a real good thing to have this in writing before you ever go to a church and have it fully understood and then have it reviewed and have your own work evaluated on a six-month basis by the pastor and a personnel committee, if you can get this done, where every 6 months you are up for evaluation. And you don't go indefinitely, but you know where you're weak and where you're strong. I don't think anything can replace being called into accountability for this. And I have been with denominational structures where I was evaluated every 6 months and where I sat down with my supervisor and we went over my job responsibilities and talked together about them. And sometimes I went out of there feeling pretty painful, but I grew through the experience and it kept me within the box that had been outlined for me. And I think that a box is the most secure thing a man can have in his job, where somebody says, you see that box? You can do anything you want to inside that box. You can move around in that box all you want to. But the minute you get outside that box, you can expect the hammer to fall and your fingers to be smashed. This is the area where you're free. And this is the area where you're not free. And it's a really comfortable thing to know that in that box, I have the opportunity to serve my Lord and to do it effectively. Now, this kind of position description that we're talking about ought to have at least these things in it. And we'll go through these very carefully and see if they generate any questions then. First of all, in one statement, clear, concise, and one sentence long, the exact task that you are hired to do should be written in one statement. The exact task, the pinpoint task that you're to be asked to do. And then that one sentence statement should be followed by two paragraphs that expanded. And the first paragraph should list your responsibility, the things that you are responsible to do. And then the second paragraph should list the authority that goes with the responsibility so you can do the job.
Now, if I am responsible for something and I do not have the authority to go with the responsibility, then I'm not responsible for it at all. And responsibility and authority are crucial issues. And they must go hand in hand in all situations. If you're given a responsibility and no authority to go with it, you're in trouble. And that authority is very, very critical to a happy staff relationship. Where does my authority lie? And then, who do I report to? And if I have someone to report to, and I don't have somebody breathing down my neck, I have somebody that is my friend when I get into trouble. I have somebody that I can share my joys with, somebody that I can give my problems to. And who you report to should never be more than one human being. You don't report to the youth committee. If a church, and I would never allow this if I were a pastor of a church, but if a church says our youth director will report to the youth committee, if I'm pastor, I want him to report either to me or somebody who does report to me in the system of management that we would set up. But if you report to a youth committee, it ought to be the chairman of the committee you report to, not the whole committee. There needs to be some person where the buck stops. And so then who do you supervise? This could be volunteer supervision as well as paid supervision. But precisely, who are the people that you supervise? And then after all those things are listed, then the scope of the work should be detailed. And this might take 12, 13, 15 items. And every item would begin with a verb. Every one of these would begin with a verb. Let me give you an example. Train all high school Sunday school teachers. Supervise the cleanliness of the recreation area. All of the various details that week in and week out, you will be responsible for. The scope of your activities would be listed. And then at the bottom, the very last thing, whatever number that would be, should be a catch-all. And that catch-all should say, under the direction of, or at the discretion of, the pastor, or whoever your immediate supervisor might be, perform any other tasks that are deemed necessary in the life of the church. And that gives a catch-all, where if there's an emergency of some sort that comes up, someone has authority to plug you in and assist you on it. Now, on my own church staff, every Monday morning, by 10 o'clock, I ask each staff member to give me a sheet of paper, a mimeograph form. And I have suggested this to other church staff members in other conferences, and they've just gone back and they've done it on their own. And it's always been helpful. You don't have to wait for your pastor to do this. But I have done this for a number of years, and I really appreciate it. I have my staff member give me the name and the date, and that form has two parts. Things I am doing this week. Places where I need help. And then at the bottom, it really isn't a part of this duet, but at the bottom, information you need to know. And that can be anything under the sun that staff member needs to pass on to me. Mrs. Brown is having an operation. Deacon Smith's wife is complaining about the nursery facility, or anything else that might come along. That's just a catch-all so that I don't get surprised by things that the staff member knows that I don't know. I take that on Monday morning and I look it over. What is my staff member going to do this week? Monday night, Tuesday night, things I'm going to do this week. I just detailed enough so that if somebody in the church says, hey, did you know that George is going fishing Thursday with me? I don't say, what? My staff member going fishing with you on a weekday? He doesn't normally take Thursdays off. I don't like surprises like that. And it's a very meaningful thing for the supervisor that you have to know what you're going to be doing and where do you need help. Now, I have cut staff meetings in half since I began to do this years ago. I look at that Monday morning, and then I call my staff in one by one, and I'll say, okay, Ronnie, this is an area where you need help. Why should we take that up with a whole staff sitting there, twiddling their thumbs, wasting all their time, while I talk to him about a personal need that he has in his job? That's idiotic. And I never allow a staff meeting to be taken up with 1 minute of time that I can spend individually working with a staff member. So by 10 o'clock, they got it on my desk, and by 15 minutes after 10, we come in and we sit down one at a time. We go over whatever the problems are. 5, 10, 15 minutes will take care of most of them. If we need to schedule an hour or an afternoon, we do it then and deal with that. And then by Tuesday morning, I know the things that the whole staff has to deal with, and when we come together, we can be creative and not spend all of our time just problem solving. But this is a corollary to your job description. If you have somebody to report to them and do it regularly. And it will defuse a lot of problems that can develop in a staff situation. And that could be the fact that the minister of music is sticking his nose into an area that I don't think he ought to be in. Well, I can go privately to my supervisor and say that and find out what, if anything, can be done about it. So that is something that can be extremely helpful. Then another thing that I require of my own staff that I think is extremely helpful is this. No staff member ever hits me cold turkey with a harebrained idea. You know, staff member, I'm just talking as a pastor. Staff members can come up with more good ideas and more dumb ideas without ever putting their mind into gear than Carter can produce liver pills with a whole factory. And the best way to defuse a dumb idea in a staff member is simply to say, okay, Ronnie or Tommy or Nancy, give me a sapata on that. And 99 times out of 100, that's the end of it. I never hear another word out of it. Because they're not committed enough to their own idea to give me a sapata on it. And nothing ever comes in to the staff meeting that's going to fly that doesn't have a written sapata in everybody's hand. And a lot of times you go to your pastor and you come home from a conference like this and man, you are so excited, you're on cloud nine. Pastor, let's do this. And you hit him cold turkey. And he says, oh boy, here we go. You know, I've got my little deal all set and everything is running smooth and now this guy has got a brand new idea. It's going to blow everything apart. How do I explain that to the personnel committee, the budget committee? We'll have to know about the money he wants to spend. The deacons are going to have to know about this. It's just too much work. And he gives me a verbal statement. No way. Have pity on your pastor. And so if you come at him with a sapata, you're going to get a little farther. And this is what a sapata is. It's simply an outline. Subject. You take a subject. The subject may be discipleship of teenagers. Objective. What is the objective of all of this? To produce mature Christian teenagers before they get away to college. Proposal. In one sentence, I propose that we implement reach-out discipleship methods in the church. Beginning date. Now, dates are very important. Because if you don't date something, you don't have any way of measuring the time that something should be achieved. Now, after the proposal, you list your plan. And your plan should be a PERT. How many of you have never heard of a PERT chart? May I see your hands? All right, let me take a few minutes and give you a PERT. Now, the way that you develop a PERT chart is this. You come along and you take a number. Let's just take the number 100, for example. You just stick it down. 100. And next to it, okay, let's say we're going to have a Christmas party. That's a dumb thing we can use to illustrate. We're going to have a Christmas party. Okay? You start hollering out to me the things that we need in order to have a Christmas party. You're going to organize a Christmas party. What's one thing that has to happen?
Food.
All right? You have to have food. You have to have food what? You have to have food ordered. You have to have food cooked. And on and on and on with the food. And then there would be
publicity.
Okay. And there would be
decorations.
Okay. Entertainment.
Pastor, what's required of the pastor?
Okay. All right. Pastor's tasks. All right. Now, as you do this, you start out with the number 100. I'm going to order the food. I'm going to cook the food. Well, I'm going to cook the food a lot later than I order it, so I'll give this a number of 200. Now, when am I going to get my publicity out? Well, I'm going to get it out after this or before that, so I'll make this 110. And then I've got to have decorations. Well, I get the decorations out after this, but before this, so I'll make this 140. And I got to have entertainment. Well, I better get that entertainment even before I order the food, so I'll make that 90. And I better tell the pastor what to do first, so I'll make that number 1. And I go through, and if I don't get enough numbers here, I can just add a 0 to each one and increase the whole thing, and I got all kinds of ways I can add it all up. And then I go back through, and I say, now, do I really have this in the best sequence? So if you have a secretary, you'd say, secretary, retype this. Take the lowest number, put it at the top of the page, and type it all the way down. Then I look over it. Then, after I've done that, I type it, and this is what I'm going to do. And then I add to it, who is going to do it, and when is it going to get done? What date is it going to get done? What, who, and when? And I list it by sequence. Now, that doesn't have to be as detailed as all this is. Obviously, it would be stupid and Mickey Mouse for a pastor to expect a church staff member to go to all that detail. But when I get done, I'm going to put that soppet, I'm going to put that PERT, Program Evaluation and Review Technique is what PERT means. I'm going to put that down. And then I'm going to start thinking in terms, as your pastor supervisor, in terms of the critical path of this plan you've given me. The critical path is, if this breaks down, when does everything go out of focus? And then I'm going to give me a bogey, and I'm going to check on you. Especially if you're the kind of staff member that I know by working with you, you are constantly going to forget details and come up short at the last minute. I'm going to be your friend. And I'm going to give you a buzz the day that you ought to order the food and say, how's the food coming? And you're going to say to me, oh, I'm getting to that. I'll be doing that in the next hour. And I smile and say, you bet you will now that I called you. But if I hadn't, you'd have forgotten about it. And I say, well, that's just fine. And we go right on. And you're doing your job because I'm helping you. But put your plan down. And put it down in enough detail so that people know that you're committed to this thing. You're willing already to pay a price because you believe in it. And then do this. Put down two advantages. Two advantages for doing this. We're going to have reach out discipleship material. All right, what are the advantages of doing this? Number one, the material is excellent. It has been tested in hundreds of other churches. It is extremely effective. Number two, our kids are ready for this, and I have already had the church invest money in my taking a week of training, and I am now trained to do this in a way that I wasn't before. My advantages. Then, pick the two most obvious disadvantages of what you're proposing and list them. If we do this, these are the disadvantages. Number one, we don't have enough budget money to do this. And after you list it, always put the word however and a comma and answer your own objection. Because that's what your preacher is going to shoot you down with. Anticipate him. Bring it up before he does and answer it before he can hit you with it. And then after you've done that, on your cuff or in your little star diary or whatever you have, write three more disadvantages that he'll probably come up with and have the answers ready. I had one of my staff members propose a whole new curriculum for our children's Sunday school. And she came to me and she gave it to me in this form, and I went back and I said, Nancy, I want you to give me 15 more disadvantages for using this material. And the reason I did it was because I knew that when I approved it and she got by me, she was going to have to face a lot of teachers that were going to have to give up an old way of doing something and move to a new way, and she was going to get shot in all directions. So I said, type them up and give them to me. I want 15 more disadvantages to this. And she could only come up with six. So I helped her, and we came up with about 20. And I said, okay, now, give me the list of all of the things that you can answer these disadvantages with. And when she finally left me, and we went to make the proposal to those that would be teaching in that area, sure enough, she got hit with nearly every one of those, and she was prepared. And they hit her, and she just bounced right back. And she wasn't discouraged, because she'd already anticipated it all. Then, the action. What is the first thing that needs to be done if we implement this? What is the very first thing that needs to be done that I, the church staff member proposing this, will do? I'm ready to do this if you give me the green light. Now that may be a little work, but old friend, how a pastor would appreciate that kind of thorough proposal being made. And you go a long way then in getting things worked out that otherwise would just kind of get bogged down in fear and in terror. I don't know whether I'm hitting anywhere close to your area of need or not, so that's all I've got to unload in the hay rack until you pry it out by asking questions.
A question about the job description. What if you're in a position where the job description may have been taken out of a book, you know, 22 years ago or something like that, and no one is really concerned about revising it? They'll just more or less verbally give you some new additions here and there. Did you take the initiative to develop your own job description?
I would ask for permission from the pastor and or the personnel committee to write a new job description, and I would start with a SOPITA, subject, job description, objective, what we have is 20 years old, proposal, I would like to write my own, plan, I will take 2 hours Thursday afternoon to do it, advantages, I'm going to be happier and you're going to have a better worker, disadvantages, it means that we're going to have to call two committees together and maybe take it to the church for a vote. Action. I'm ready to do it as soon as you say yes. And then I would do it. A job description should not ever go more than a year before it's totally revised. It ought to be reviewed every 6 months with your supervisor and you sitting down. And if you say, well, things have changed. There are a lot of new situations. This is no longer applicable. All right, we'll change this, we'll change that. And it is my personal feeling that the first draft of a job description should always be written by the employee. Excuse me, I've erased it. From here down. That top statement is something that the church and or the pastor gives you, and that's the box you live in. And a lot of the problems that I've had with staff members are because they want to keep coloring outside the lines. They've got their own career in their mind, and I don't have their career in my mind. I'm not concerned about whether they get a big name somewhere. I'm concerned about one thing. Is this job right here going to be done? And if they'll live within that, they can do anything they want to. But when they get out here and they want to start this little project and that little project and this little side deal and this little personal thing, the answer is no way, bud. That's not what we brought you here to do. Any corporation works the same way with its executives, and churches need to work that way too. So if you've got a 20-year-old job description, I sure would work on that. Yes?
Can you go over some of the difficulties and options that are available to you? Let's say your pastor leaves and you want to come and whatever. You're on church staff and they change pastors.
Okay. I think the first thing I would do would be to sit down with that pastor and say, look, this is me. Here are my credentials. This is what I've done. And some of you know Tommy. Tommy never knew me. I had hired Ron Davis and put him on the staff. But Tommy was really worried about my coming. Before I ever arrived on the scene, Tommy wrote me a 3-page letter, and I got it in Singapore. He gave me a little case history of who he was and what his philosophy was. And he said, I sure would like for you to evaluate me and see how you think I'll fit. And he did everything but present a letter of resignation dated on my desk in that letter saying, man, if you really don't want me, let me know and I won't cause you any trouble. I'll move on out. And I wrote him right back. And I said, Tommy, I don't know you, but I love you. And I love you more for the honesty in which you have tried to evaluate yourself. And he told me, among other things, I'm scared to death of you. I'm afraid of you. I'm awed by you, and I'm afraid to work under you. I feel that I am not capable of working under somebody like you. I don't have the training and the expertise, and I'm just scared of you. And I said, okay, partner, I understand. You and I will work through that. It'll take you at least a week to get over that. And so we worked through the thing together. But I think it's really a good thing for you to be very open in expressing your concerns. And in talking to pastors, the greatest problem they have in coming into a situation is with a staff member who's got himself really rooted down into the congregation, has got a little power base he works out of, and sits there like the big threat to the new pastor coming in with the attitude of, preacher, if you step on me, I got the church secretary on my side, the wife of the chairman of deacons is teaching young people, and she's on my side, and boy, I can really give you a fit if you get out of line. And you let a pastor walk into that paranoid situation, and that's trouble. And shame on you for it. So, on the other side, you're there, and this new man is coming. I think the best thing to do is to be so, peel the layers of the onion off and say, boy, here's me all the way down to the core. If you like it, fine. If not, just give me time and I'll find something. And if a pastor really sees that kind of openness, he'll be defanged and he won't be afraid of it. And then you can work together or move on, depending on what his philosophy of the church staff is and what you're wanting for yourself. I think communication is critical.
Let me ask you a question. If you're in a totally independent situation where the pastor exercises no authority over your life and you channel your ministry the way you see fit, what can you do? I appreciate what you've already shared here because this is really helpful to me to see some ways that I can begin to really give input to my pastor. But it's really in that situation, it's a youth minister's responsibility to communicate, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. It's up to you to do it. Now, your concern is that your pastor doesn't give you any leadership. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And when there is no leadership forthcoming, then you feel a little helpless because it's good to have somebody there that you can rely on and depend on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I don't want to be the answer man on this. Would somebody like to respond? Would you like to?
I have another question. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. All right.
I would you, on the same question, what would you recommend? Would you recommend that somebody in a position like that, as a staff person, take the initiative and just start doing some of this stuff, or, you know, just...
Yeah, there isn't anything here that would make a pastor angry. If you started reporting to him every Monday morning, tell him what you're doing. He'll never be upset about that. Give him sopitas. He won't be upset about that.
That's right. Those are real helpful.
You see, you're under his subjection, and you're letting him know you are. Yes.
I was in a situation like that before, and I had to begin to put myself under his authority by doing things like this. It gave him a sense of security, and it helped him later on after he went someplace else and I went someplace else, because I was the first staff that he had, and a lot of guys just don't know how to handle it. But whether he's authoritative or not, keeping him informed is so important. I've worked as a staffer for 10 years, and I know the sense of security that they have knowing exactly what I'm doing, and they really appreciate me keeping them informed.
My question had to do with multi-member staff. What is your recommendation concerning those flare-ups between staff members? Going back to, like you had mentioned before, where the majority of staff is basically new and they're still the one who has his roots. He's used to getting his way, and here's all these new people with new ideas.
When we begin to work in these areas, the most deadly thing in the world is advice. That is going to become a rule to follow, because sure as shooting is going to be a wrong thing. But oh, I know what you're talking about. Here's an education director, and he's been there forever. Maybe a new pastor comes in, a new minister of music, a new minister of youth, maybe new church secretaries, and this guy's just rooted. He's pulling this power source game. He's got all his buddies and his friends, and he's been working with them for years. In a situation like that, you can't go wrong unless he wants to dominate your job. You can't go wrong by saying, I need some help. I need some advice. Tell me about this. And you may just bite the bullet while you're doing it. But let him know that you do respect that he's been around a while. And you can defang him by not being a threat to him. You threaten him when you stay away from him. When you get close to him and say, hey man, I'm totally transparent. You can see all the way through me. You know all these folks, you know this, you know that. I've done this in denominational jobs where I went, where men had been there for 15 years and I came in. And my own personal impression of those men were that they had done 5 years of work in the last 15 years total. But I'd go out, I'd have lunch, and I'd say, tell me about this. Teach me here. I need to learn the ropes from you. And I'd let that person be my supervisor, you know, even though they didn't ask to be. They really were threatened by me because maybe they recognized that things were changing and that there were new methods that had been taught in school they didn't know. But if you take away their fear, if you remove their fear, then you're going to be in a position to help. Miles, get on up here and help me, you old war horse. Come on, come on, come on. Yes.
Well, go ahead, use the first.
Okay.
And one thing, too, in a very similar situation, I found that if you do that, what you suggested, particularly the staff member that is seeing the power source, is feeling a sense of cure, and it becomes more transparent or available to him. In a particular case, in the situation that I had placed one time, he was incapable of leading me beyond where I was. And so this made it really easy to say, well, this person can't lead me, so I'm going to go off and do my own thing. But the reversal of that was to get close to him. And I found out then that he became less insecure, less
father built around me, and as a result of it, I was able then, he came at times to seek my advice, even though he was my superior, and worked in reverse of that, but he began to have a good working relationship.
Yes.
So I felt insecure somewhat at the beginning because he couldn't lead me beyond where I already was.
Look beyond his fault and see his need. And you're never going to get hurt if you take that fellow staff member at where he is and put your hat in your hand and go to him and say, I'm willing to wash your feet in the Spirit of Jesus. And if he steps all over you, remember this. You don't always need to fight your own battles. My daddy's been a pastor for more years by two than I've been alive, and I'll tell you, friend, that's not literally true either, not quite that long, but he's been pastoring for over 50 years. When I started in, he said, son, if somebody in your church starts walking all over you, keep your mouth shut, because somebody loves you. And somebody will see them walking all over you, and somebody will fight your battle for you if you don't do it yourself. I was in North Carolina with a dear pastor holding a revival meeting. We had the morning worship service. We went out to eat, and at the meal, that was the first Sunday, the first meal, he poured his heart out about an educational director he had who was a skunk in the grass, and he was doing everything he could to undermine that pastor. The pastor had kept his mouth shut about it. And he said, oh, pray with me. Pray that somehow God will deal with this problem. If he had fought that man, he probably would have split the church. And as we finished that luncheon, he said, I left my Bible at the church. Let's go back by. We drove by, and when we came up into the parking lot, the place was loaded with automobiles. And he turned white and he said, every deacon's car is there and I don't know a thing about this meeting. He said, wait here. I said, I'll be glad to wait. And he went in and he came back in about 3 minutes and sat in the car just numb. And I said, what's going on? He said, Ralph, I walked into that room and the chairman of the deacons said, Pastor, we love you and we don't need you in this room. Please go home. I'll come and visit you later. And in that room was that education director. And the deacons had sawed that guy off at the roots. And they dismissed him and he was gone. And the whole board of deacons did it. And that pastor was wise enough to keep his mouth shut and know that the people he prayed with and cried with and the people he buried and married loved him. And they weren't going to let anybody get away with that. Many times as a staff member, if you'll show the Spirit of Christ and hush, your pastor will see what's going on. Someone will see. And just let Jesus handle it. You don't always have to fight your own battles. Yes?
This kind of goes on with what Robbie was sharing. I feel like I have a lot of freedom to do whatever I wish as far as my ministry is concerned, but how would you feel, or what would you suggest as an approach to it? I feel like my pastor has an awful lot to offer me, you know? I feel like I see God at work in his life, and yet I don't know, we never have time to share what God's doing in his life that I know I could profit from, you know? Would you be intimidated as a pastor for a staff man to come to you and say, you know, I really feel a need to be under you and just to understand how God's working in your life and what can you share, you know, just to get to know you better in that way. You know, what would you say, you know, or do you feel like that would be intimidating to the pastor or what?
I can only answer for me. I've never had a guy say that because I try to have an intimate enough relationship that could never happen. But if a guy said that to me, man, I'd take him at his word. You know, I'd say, all right, well, let's meet Tuesday morning at 6 a.m. and we'll pray together for an hour and then we'll go have breakfast. And if I were making a hospital call, I'd say, you busy? Come on, right along with me. Or if I were going to make a two-day trip and I knew he could be free, I'd take him along. I'd let him in. I'd let him be a part of me. I'd invite him Sunday evening to my home when I'm inviting church members over. I try to disciple him, but not all pastors are like I am, and I don't think I can give a blanket answer. Miles, how would you answer that?
You know, Fred Swank, most of his books I've read, he's notorious, with Sagamore Hill for 4 years, and I never, ever saw Fred anywhere before he had a staff member with him. Every time he went anywhere, the hospital, to the associational meeting, pastor, he always had one of his staff members with him. And this is where they learned. This is where they shared. This is where they got with him on that basis. And later on, he had a good excuse. He had cataracts, and they drove for him to different places. But before that ever happened, he did this. This would be what I would say. And I know we get busy, and we haven't opened this, but I've had several of our staff members, when they left for various reasons, gone to a place, I said, what would you like to do differently? And several of them said, well, I wish that we'd had more time together. I'd really got to know your heart, even though we try to pray together and have extensive staff meetings, retreats, and other things. So I'd say, if you say to the pastor, I'd like to make your hospital visit with you. I'd like to go out on some of your pastoral calls and visits. That's when you really have that intimate relationship. And I've made it a purpose never to go anywhere without somebody with me. This is against my nature because, well, I'm a gregarious person. I love people, but I like to be by myself once in a while. I purpose in my heart never to go anywhere by myself.
Yes.
What about spiritual disciplines on staff? Do you have a time during a staff meeting when you check up on it? Do you put any disciplines on your staff? Or do you count on this personal interaction to spiritually?
Boy, I have really struggled with this. I know there are pastors who will say, how many hours have you prayed this week? And give me your... I know one pastor who had a devotional series. I believe he got it from the Navigators, and he had the staff do it and turn it into him on a regular basis. With these blanks, you know, the point with the passage and everything. And he kind of negotiated his staff in this area. And I have really struggled with this because I have a principle in my own life that is, my conversion was a love affair with Jesus Christ, and my relationship to Him is a love affair. And if I put the spirit of oughtness into my staff members in this area, they will not function from overflow. And we have, right now, we have a prayer meeting that meets Tuesday mornings at 6 a.m. I've got 8 or 9 of my men. They're always there. And I'm always there. And I have refrained from going to my men on my staff and saying, if you guys really love the Lord and you wanted to be an example to the body, and if you were really as spiritual as you ought to be, and if you're as dedicated as you ought to be, and all the other guilt things I could say to heap on them, I'd say, you be there at 6 a.m. And I haven't done that deliberately just because I don't think that staff people who become involved in this sort of thing from oughtness really profit all that much by it. And so I've just taken it to Papa and I've said, Lord, give those guys a thirst and do something in me that will make the fragrance come to the point where they'll recognize the value of it. And one of my guys is coming now. And I haven't said a word to him about coming or because he came, complimenting him. I think this kind of growth is something that I don't want to legislate. And I know there are pastors that say you will visit 4 hours a week. And if it's in a man's job description to do visitation, that's one thing. But to say, man, if you're on my staff, you produce 3 converts a week. Or else. No, thank you. Not me.
Okay. So you make the opportunity available to be together for the spiritually challenging to occur.
I do that, and we do it by retreats. We, twice a year, we have staff retreats where we just withdraw to Touch Ranch, a ranch that our church owns. Or we don't own it, but we might as well. It belongs to one of our families, and they never use it, and they've given it to us. But we go up there. Sometimes we'll go to the seashore, which is nearby. And we're just alone with each other and with God. We do that. We share books all the time.
Well, let me share one thing. Our fellows knew all about these accountability groups. And one of them said, well, you know, it'd really be neat to go through one of those. And so I wrote them a letter like I would write these men that God lays on my heart.
Tell us what an accountability group is.
Well, it's a group of men that God lays on my heart, usually no more than five or six at the most. Out of that, I just present a challenge, and they have to respond. They have to contact me. They have to make commitments that they will stay with me for the period of time, whether it's 6 months or a year or whatever, and that they will reproduce themselves. And when they finish, they'll either get with another individual or with a small group, and they'll lead them through this same basic material or some other material that they develop for spiritual growth. And we just had some really exciting things happen. My wife takes the wives then of these men and waits until the wives volunteer and respond, and then leads them through her group that meets. And so our fellas, and I'm accountable for everything that they are. Every assignment, every scripture memorization, everything, I'm accountable. I share it, they share it. We go around the circle and different things of prayer and limited Bible study and so forth. But our men said, you know, it sure would be neat. And I said, all right, if you want to come, I'll form a group. And I wrote them down. I said, it's up to you to respond. I'm not going to think about you any less. If you don't, this is your commitment. And so we meet, we're meeting Thursday morning at 6:30 to 7:30 every Thursday morning. And in it already, there's been an openness. There's been an opening in their own spirit. And there have been some sharing of things they've never, ever shared before. And I believe God's going to do some really good things out of it. We assume so many, many things, you see. Every one of these men on our staff has been a member of our church before they ever came on the staff. We've drawn from every one of these six men has been a member of our church for at least a year, 2 years, 3 years, and from that we've drawn them. But I realize I assume many, many things rather than to meet them where they are and then meet. So that's proving beneficial.
What material do you use for these accountability classes, Miles?
Okay, I have two different levels. One is kind of the fundamentals of faith thing, learning, using the Navigator's Design for Discipleship as a six booklet foundation. And each one of those booklets has about five chapters in it. And then we've accumulated over 30 different pamphlets and 10 mimeograph things that we do. These are things like the tiring of the urgent, different things like that that go with these different chapters and supplement them. Costs about $8 just to buy the material and to form the packet, which I give out to them as we go along. Evaluation sheets. And then we have another level of discipleship that, for instance, like I'm working with in my staff, is working in four areas, spending about 2 months on the tongue. That's how we start out on taming the tongue. And then the second thing is on our time. The third thing is on the teachings of Jesus, personal application of these things, working through any theological and doctrinal problem. The fourth thing is our talent. How do we relate what we have as ability to what God can do through us and with us and for us? Therefore, we really get into the blind spots and the iron sharpening iron, and it really gets within us.
6 months on each?
Yes. No, on those four points. We spend about 2 months on each one of those areas.
How long on fundamentals?
That takes about 25 weeks.
Then the balance of the year on the advanced.
Right.
You stay with these six men for a year?
Yes.
They make a year commitment.
They make a commitment for a year. And there again, some of them are businessmen. They go out of town. We just pick up the thread. We don't record anything, of course. It's all not anything on tape. But they pick up the thread. They do their assignments. So for instance, just the thing of keeping a life's notebook, whatever you want to call it, a spiritual diary, whatever. There's one fellow who's an actuary for Pioneer American Life Insurance, Vice President. Just turned his life around, the accountability of it.
Now, after you take them through that year, then you have each of them do the same thing.
Right.
With six other men.
Right. Either one man or two men or three men, but at least one. And we keep a flow chart of where these people go. We're in the fourth generation now.
With your staff, you begin with the advanced.
Right.
Whoa, will you let me be your pupil and teach me how to do that?
We'd come and learn you.
Can we get this from you? Those of us that might be interested?
Okay.
$6?
$8
for the material? Okay.
Is this something that you just order, or have you put it together yourself?
We've ordered it from all these different sources. We have names, addresses.
If you had a list of materials, we could order it ourselves.
I've got it.
Can we get the list for under $8?
What did I bring you things?
Well, mine is sold.
That's from Uncle Ralph, Miles.
$8.
Yes, sir. The next move is yours. That is a fantastic pattern.
That's accountability right there.
When do you do this? Always early in the morning?
We've done it early in the morning. The wives are a little bit more of a challenge because we've got babies and things. For instance, like the staff, we just worked around where the men on Saturday morning, we all of our men work with the exception of one. All of our staff members have one day in which they're completely away from the church without any expectations on them, any calls on them. We give that to their wife, or if they have children, to their wife and children. And we have one fella whose wife is teaching school, and they don't have any children, and this is a temporary thing, so that Saturday is his day. But this was so important to them that the men keep the kids. It's at 8 o'clock on Saturday morning for the six wives. They drive over to our home, and Jeannie is leading them. She's usually basically using the gracious woman and her own development.
Do you have material on these four things here, or do you
right.
make this?
And it's a real rough thing, but
okay.
I'll be glad to share that.
I don't care how rough it is. That's part of the $8?
That's part of the $8.
Okay.
That's great.
Isn't that super?
Miles, on the teachings of Jesus, what do you cover in that particular section?
Well, all this is real loose now. There again, I'm not a very... I have to know where I'm going. But we don't have an A, B, C, D, E, F, G. It's amazing, just with six staff members, if you go around and ask them, what are some scriptures that you struggle with, or that you don't understand, or that you have difficulty in applying, you see? And we just work those things out, work them through, do Bible studies, word studies, until they grasp what God is saying to them. A lot of times there's a reason they don't want to understand that scripture, and they never have been aware of it, you see? Or we just clear this thing. It's just a real loose thing. We just go until everybody reaches a point of satisfaction in their own mind.
How long do you meet?
An hour.
One hour.
We struggle with that because we incorporate these things. One, we incorporate memorization. We have a scripture to memorize at least one or two every week. We've got 12 tongue tamers, for instance. We get on the tongue. And there are 12 scriptures. Boy, and those things just devastate you. You know, you've been learning scripture all your life, but any man among you seemeth to be religious, you know. And bridleth not his tongue, that person's religion is vain, empty, fruitless. And so we memorize scripture and we share that back and forth. Then we have scripture study, where we'll do a Bible study for a few minutes. Then we have work assignments, where we read material and then we answer questions and make sure we all understand it. We have a sharing time, and we, here again, I don't mean to ride this horse to death, but sharing is good, but if you just have sharing, you really don't have any substance. You have to have a balance in all of these things. And then we have a time of praying, and so about four or five things every morning, that hour, that we get in that session, so that it gives us some real substance.
Is the time a tight factor there? You have to stay pretty close to the time schedule?
Well, a lot of these, one fellow's head of the project thing is general dynamics, and so a certain time comes, he's got to be there. Another fellow's a pharmaceutical salesman. So we try to be, this is one of my weak points, having gift of service, is that time is not very relevant to me. But it was, the first group we brought together, all seven of the men had the spiritual gift of administration. All seven of them were deacons. All seven of them were departmental directors within our Sunday school. And it was the most fantastic thing because whenever we brought up a question or a problem, every one of them said, I know exactly what you mean. Boy, they identified in their family relationships. They had the same basic problems with their wives. In their business relationship, they had the same basic problems in their business relationship. I didn't plan it that way. It just happened that way. And other groups haven't worked out that way. But that's this is the structure that we have. We try to stick in that hour. I bring coffee and juice. That's my ministry. I bring coffee and juice, and boy, you get up and get the old bod up at 5:30, a couple of 3 mornings a week, and that's earlier than I usually got, so we have a little something to clear their eye.
Super. Any other question on another area? Yes.
I wanted to ask, and this is a little bit abstract perhaps, but Ralph, what would you suggest in terms of things we can specifically do to really seek to build relationships between other staff members, not the pastor that we're accountable to, but people that we're co-laboring with, and yet oftentimes because our job descriptions are moving in completely different directions, or seemingly so anyhow. Well, for example, our minister of education or our associate pastor, rather, our minister of music, I see a staff meeting and I may brush by in the office from time to time. What are some specific things you would suggest, and what exactly should we be seeking to do in regards to our relationships at that point? What kind of responsibility do we have in terms of relation building with other staff members?
You know, some of these things blow my mind because I just can't conceive of a staff functioning like the one you're talking about. Mm-hmm. What would I do? I'd ask that guy to go to lunch with me. I'd drop by and say, hey, you got 15 minutes for coffee? I'd go out of my way to develop an eyeball-to-eyeball level of relationship. I'd have him and his wife over some evening for a meal in my home. I'd ask him to go on an overnight vacation, his family and mine. I take the initiative to develop a relationship. How can the body of Christ function if the staff doesn't know each other any more intimately than that? The whole structure of body life has to begin with intimacy on a personal level before I know you well enough to know what your spiritual gifts are so I can call upon you when we're in a ministry together. Now, we right now are going through a series that we do twice every year for the membership. We take them in small groups up to Touch Ranch. I'm flying back early Friday morning because I'll be in another one of these this weekend. We go up to Touch Ranch and we live together Friday night, Saturday, and all day Sunday. And I ask the deacons that are taking their groups up there not to come back on Sunday. The deacons conduct the worship service up there. We don't hire any cooks or any babysitters. And we just mingle and sleep together. This past Friday night, I slept on the floor in a room with 6 other guys. We find out who snores and who doesn't. And we find out who can do dishes and who goofs off. And sometimes we dig a trench and bury a cable, even though we might hire somebody to do it, because the discipline of working together teaches us something about each other.